listening to Rage Quit Radio with Mike Brown, Rich Morrow, Dennis Lee, and Nathan Starwell.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 31 of Rage Quit Radio. This is Mike playing Signar.
Rich playing Convergence and stabbing people in the hand.
Dennis playing trolls and making people lose their change.
Playing Circle and Retribution.
And Chris, hoping to play Mercenary some point today and pissing, you know, several white people off.
our hopes go out to, and get well wishes go out to Crispy. We hear he has the plague or the Black Death or the flu or something. I don't know what. But apparently he consumed an entire bottle of NyQuil and decided to sleep through all of today. So,
what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Or cripples you.
Or hurts like a mother. But anyway, we're hoping that this does not sideline Crispy from editing this episode, as it would me. Want to first, real quick, before we get too far in, for anyone out there who is listening that is awaiting the Scarab Almost Live episodes that should have been up sometime earlier this month, being February, although probably March by the time you hear this, my apologies, but Google Drive, I don't remember if it's OneDrive or whatnot, but whatever upload service that Brian Cape uses when he uploads them for us to do the editing, hates my face. And it tells me that every time I download them to edit them, that the files are corrupted. So Brian is now in possession of my thumb drive, and he will give me those episodes, the raw soon, which means that the actual episodes will go up soon-ish. Probably not this week, because this coming weekend will be GnomeCon!
Yay!
GnomeCon 4 in Savannah, Georgia. I understand Rich is not going.
I'm not going.
So, unfortunately. Well, there's reasons. Are you going? No.
What?
Slacker. Anyway.
Nate is a slacker.
Nate's a slacker. Hold on. Is there a Star Wars tournament the same weekend?
I think there is.
See, look at me.
Slacker. I believe there is a Star Wars LCG tournament.
Priority.
I'm starting to play Star Wars.
Is there a Conquest tournament that weekend? Because then we know.
No, I don't think there's a Conquest.
But myself, Chris, and Dennis will all be down there. Is Crispy going?
I don't know.
I actually don't think so. I'm not sure of the details, but possibility is no.
Well, at least three of your Rage Quit hosts will be down at GnomeCon, which will be the anniversary. Chris will have the wonderful privilege of hosting the anniversary of Rage Quit Radio Almost Live, which first happened at GnomeCon 3 last year. And this episode, for anyone that actually keeps track of such things, actually marks the first anniversary of Rage Quit Radio. We put up our first podcast in February of 2014. So this is our anniversary show.
I'm actually surprised we've been podcasting that long, now that I think about it.
There were some breaks.
Yeah.
Still.
Mistakes were made. So.
There were some breaks.
Yeah.
Children have been had.
Let's see.
Children
have been had. People found new jobs or got promoted.
Rings have been exchanged.
Yeah, that's the one that actually hasn't been said on the podcast yet.
That's true.
One of the reasons there has been a break this go-around is because since our last episode, I am now engaged to be married.
Congratulations, buddy!
So, my dearly beloved Kana is at home right now throwing a party of her own, not listening to anything we ever record, but on the off chance that she does, I love you, sweetie, and I'm very much a lucky man. But right now, we're going to kind of tell a little bit about what's going to be going down at GnomeCon. We are saddened to know that the defending Iron Painter will not be in the house. Richard Morrow, the Iron Painter GnomeCon.
Yeah, I would like to preserve some clothes to be decent to wear.
You only one Iron Painter because somebody spilled paint all over you.
Okay, first of all, that is some BS. That should never have happened. He was just going crazy. You know it.
Also, the guy that judged the models did not know that paint had been spilled on my pants until after he had announced me the winner.
True.
But AJ wouldn't be there, so you have a decent shot.
AJ's not there either?
Well, AJ, I believe, has been deployed.
It's not about having a decent shot. I mean, I would win if I went. I got family obligations, man. So
priorities, we all know. So,
and Richard's like, I apologize for dipping out on whatever Zerkova game you had planned for me this year.
Which I'm borrowing your Zerkova, by the way.
Thanks for letting me know.
And the other defending champion for GnomeCon Open is not going to be there.
Oh, Corey Hoffman is not going to be there.
No.
he's in the building. For those right of now.
Yeah, I know. Corey is here running a Netrunner tournament as we speak. And this is
Corey Hoffman.
Yeah,
Corey Hoffman.
Corey
Hoffman. We need you.
One second.
Come here. Oh. He's in a
dude. You're fighting Pete. When, how hard could that be?
When you're done, come join us.
So anyway, for everybody who is playing in the GnomeCon Open, you actually have a chance this year.
There will be a new champion crown.
Yes. There's
a 100% chance that's going to happen.
Plus, you have a chance at being the best sportsman, too.
On another note, I'm pretty 100% sure I'm going to Gen Con this year.
Oh, very cool.
Hey, what? When?
When Gen Con happens, Chris. When else?
Talking about... Did you get the hotel or whatnot? Or whoever?
John. I got to talk to John. As long as he gets a room, I'm going.
I was supposed to go with you.
Anywho.
We'll talk to John. John knows you, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know if he lets black people ride in his car.
Damn it.
Okay, anyways. So back to GnomeCon.
We're talking about War Machine.
So there's War Machine at Gen Con. Anyways.
At GnomeCon on Friday at GnomeCon, for those people who are interested, that is the Coastal Carolina, the Coastal Georgia Center. And that is going to be hopefully this weekend from when you're listening to this. It's March 6th, 7th, and 8th. So hopefully this will go up before we get to GnomeCon. But if not, you'll be listening almost live before this comes out. But on that Friday will be the Five Fingers Throwdown, which is a wonderful tournament that's going to be Friday starting at 5 o'clock, 35 points. Basically, each round one of your cards is stolen from you, either your caster's stat card or your caster's spell and feat card. Then they are shuffled up and redistributed at random. So by the time that the tournament ends, you will have two cards that you probably did not start with. Then we have, after that, basically 30 minutes after the Five Fingers Throwdown is what this says, we will have Highlander, The Joker's Wild, and that is where we put way too many people on a table that is way too small for them, and hilarity ensues. You bring one caster, one Jack or Beast, no characters, no huge bases.
I'll bring Zico.
You do that. for the record, at Scarab, Karchev won, or almost won, the second. In Highlander Joker's Wild.
That's actually probably pretty good.
Yeah.
Probably pretty good, because you, like, swap out Karchev with, like, an actual feat and an actual spell list.
Well, no, this is in Highlander. You don't get stuff swapped around. No, this dude had Karchev and one Jack, and on a table of I forget how many.
Oh, but Sanders, used to do that.
But this dude actually Karchev took second, whereas Sanders typically failed.
Karchev has a lot of health.
It's hard to kill Karchev.
It helped that the guy playing, a guy named Robin, who we did talk to briefly on the Almost Live episodes, but Robin, who plays War Machine literally 3 days a year, which is at Scarab, which means he has a combined, over 4 years he has been playing this game, he has a combined, I think, 2 weeks of actual game experience, which means nobody assumed that he knew anything. They were largely right. And so no one went after Karchev. And so he made it to second. But he was a little upset because his perfect record was broken. He actually won something because he got second, got a medal for it. Then on, let's see here, on Saturday, first thing in the morning, will be the preliminaries of the GnomeCon Open. The GnomeCon Open preliminaries will be 35 points.
Oh, thank God.
A big dance.
It is four rounds no matter what.
Really?
At the conclusion of those four rounds, the top eight players will be determined, and they will comprise the GnomeCon Open finals on Sunday.
Okay.
And it is three lists, 35 points. Then... Saturday night, for those people who are interested, there will be a 35-point spell draft.
Ooh, I want to do that. I missed that at Mace last year.
That sounds awesome.
And then on Sunday will be the GnomeCon Open Finals, which will be 50 points, two lists with specialists. So it's actually a slightly different format than the prelim round.
Mm.
So that's going to be a lot of fun at GnomeCon. So, and we're going to have a good gang of people down there helping, because Brian Cape, of course, handles most of the administrative stuff at the conventions. I'll be there as well. I'll be on social media and putting everything out as I always try to do. Whether he knows it or not yet, Jared Fisher will be judging most of the events. I'm not sure that he's been told that yet, but if you're listening, Fish, you're going to be working at GnomeCon. You're going to be judging a lot. And,
is he a press gang there?
He is not. He wants to get some experience on his resume as a judge at conventions, and so we are going to help him get that experience.
Oh, okay.
And then I know John Lawler will be down there from Columbia. So, looking very much forward to GnomeCon. One thing we haven't had a chance to do, because people by the time, or at least in the near future, will know how Scarab went and her stuff from Almost Live, but Nate was at Siege of Augusta the same weekend and is the new Siege Open champion, as I understand.
Yep.
So how was Siege?
Siege was actually really fun. I even remembered to write down notes of my opponent's names because I actually played against three people I had never played before.
Oh, nice.
I like this.
I played against Chris Fowler, who I believe is an Augusta local, maybe Atlanta.
I think Fowler is North Carolina.
Yeah, I think Chris Fowler is a North Carolina cat, I think.
I've
met him.
He played Cricks.
Uh-huh.
I played him in the second round. In the first round, I played a dude named Brent Murray. He was from Tennessee. They'd driven down from... it's this side of Tennessee, not the way out west side of Tennessee. And then in the finals, I played against Ben Whitaker, who played Convergence, and he was one of the three Tennessee guys. The other Tennessee guy, I didn't write down his name, unfortunately, but they were really pretty cool guys. One guy was playing minions, so he knew he was for real. He wasn't even playing gator minions; he was playing pig minions.
Wow.
He was playing like the new Arcadia steer, a newish Arcadia steer,
right,
with Goraxes and whatnot, and then I think Carbon is a caster. But the final game was pretty intense. It was Iron Mother versus Assyria. He was locked out of Lucant, which actually made my choice a little bit easier to like what to actually put on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And that game was crazy. It featured Colossal on Colossal Throwdown in the center of the board. It was like Primaxian just going toe-to-toe with Hyperion. Hyperion finishes off Primaxian, and an Assimilator comes in to try to finish off Hyperion. And like bricks one of his attacks. I think he bricks the charge attack. Just like either flubs the damage roll or flubs the attack roll. And so next turn, Hyperion smashes the Assimilator. So there's just like a huge, and like by the end of the game, the Hyperion was like half out of commission. So I like to like just imagine like this huge pile of rubble just in the middle of the board. I think I ended up winning on scenario, but like Hyperion was just smashing stuff out of the zone turn after turn. So it was pretty big. It was a lot of fun. Another highlight from that game was that Ayana and Holt survived three reflex servitor charges. Primaxian just kept putting out the mines, just kept running them into Ayana and Holt. And it was so funny because the first one, because I was keeping Ayana, Holt, Eris kind of like hunkered down behind Hyperion with Assyria so they could arcane vortex to stop like stupid shrapnel swarm, because I hate that spell, but like to stop that from hurting them. It's like the reflex servitor flies in the first one, it charges Ayana, misses Ayana, blows up Eris, doesn't do any damage to Holt. It does like 1 point of damage to Ayana. Second one charges in, doesn't do any damage to Ayana, doesn't do any damage to Holt. The third one charges in, doesn't do any damage to Holt, does like 2 points of damage to Ayana. And they ultimately, Ayana just ended up doing like it gave me a bunch of extra damage. She kept hitting stuff with the kiss. She hit like Primaxian with the kiss, and then like the Assimilator with the kiss, and so on. So that I think that like ended up swinging the game in my favor, because I have never had a game where Ayana and Holt have been attacked
and lived
and had like both of them lived, let alone three times,
right,
in the same.
And of course, it kills Aeris. So, you can never have Aeris shoot anybody.
I have never put a reflex servitor into many solos and not killed them.
Yeah,
like that's the thing. Reflex servitors are great. I've killed Gaston.
Yeah,
yeah, that pissed me off.
Yeah, and we did play a very short little 6-player tournament today, which was a good deal of fun, I think.
Yes, it was.
So, okay.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, 35-point little journeyman finale for those who were able to get down here today. Richard won.
I did.
So. Congratulations to Richard. I got to join the elite group of people who have lost to Richard Morrow on the final table of a tournament. So, and I played Andrew, I think it is, in the first round, and I loved Nate's response from two tables over, because we were the first game to finish, when bottom of two, Andrew lost because Thunderhead got within 6 inches of his caster. And,
yep.
And Nate just sat there and was like, so, T-Head? Yep. And Nate was just beaming. He was like, yep.
You didn't know how it worked, did you? I think that was my exact words.
You didn't know what he did you? But it's one of those tricks like Molly Karn. You will lose to it once.
I lose Molly Karn
to Cold Star.
It's like you'll lose to it once because you don't know what the hell
it does.
You
have no idea what it does.
And then you will proceed to lose to it more because you can't stop with it.
Stupid Molly Karn.
Thunderhead is different.
Speaking of, I was looking at that new Scorn box, and it does have Molly Karn in it.
Yes, it
does. That Scorn box looks awesome.
That Scorn box is amazing.
I'm getting it first.
What Rich is talking about here is, Privateer Press is going to do all-in-one army boxes now that are 35-point armies ready to go, and they're actually good lists because, like, the Kador one is Sorsha 2 Winter Guard Death Star.
Yeah.
So,
with Ayana and Holt.
With Ayana and Holt.
With Spriggan and Demolisher.
Yeah. I mean, you could take the Demolisher and swap it off with something else.
I think you probably got both and put in Beast.
It comes with Widowmakers. Yeah.
I think it shows you all the lists in the
Yeah, and it comes with Aeon Holt and the War Dog and Cosmic Joe.
Then you got the Scorn one, which is the Molech Karn missile.
The Scorn one has a Gladiator and Molech Karn, a full group of Incendiari, a full group of Praetorian Swordsmen with a UA, and it also
Makeda.
It has Makeda. And
Makeda 2, right?
Yeah, Makeda 2. There's something else in there, too.
Road to War.
Yeah.
The box is good.
Pretty good list.
So, I'm very much looking forward to those. I await to see what the troll one is. I don't think I've seen the troll one yet.
It's in
New Quarter?
It's in the new No Quarter, I think.
Okay.
I don't remember exactly where it is.
There's a new No Quarter up there already?
Well, I have it, I don't remember what it is.
I came in the other day after work just to browse around. Mm-hmm. I was looking at models, and like my eyes wandered to the troll section. I saw the box of Highwaymen, so I pick it up. I look at the models, and yep, that's Mike's next faction.
That was going to be Mike's next faction for quite a while.
Braylon, she's awesome.
I played Dennis round one in the journey tournament. We both attritioned forever.
I know.
I couldn't kill him off.
Because it was the funny thing to me, I'm not used to being the first game to end in a round. So,
well, you haven't played Haley T-Head enough.
But, because I was playing Signar, Rich, of course, won with Convergence, Dennis with Trolls, Nate was playing Red.
Yep.
Yep. So, Nate lost to 1,800 Bogtrogs.
I killed most of the Bogtrogs. There was only one. I mean, is Rask a Bogtrog?
Yes.
And there were only two Bogtrogs left alive on the floor. I lost on scenario, but I mean, it was whatever.
I wanted to play against a list with umpteen million obstructors.
The only reason I don't think I had to play against umpteen million obstructors was because I had T-Head.
Yeah, oh yeah. I was like, we got to the table, and I was like, so one of your lists is Haley T-Head. Can't play that Axis tier. And then I was like, I'll play with Lucan, and I didn't pay attention to that. I thought one of the flags still went away, and it didn't. So I was super worried about losing on scenario because that Lucan force at 3/5 can't spread out as much.
Yeah.
But it's okay. Positive charge converters just put stuff in the ground.
So. Yes, it does. Especially when your opponent brings an ass of lights and one heavy.
They're not inverters. So. They're spring banglers.
They're dildozers.
The dildozers.
But a lot of fun, and that is actually what brings us to our subject of discussion for this episode, which was spawned by a thing that was on Facebook in one of the local meta groups lately. I believe it was the Borderlands Warming Hordes page. But question of how much we've talked about player etiquette and things like that on the show before, much in our earliest episodes. So revisiting to a point, how much responsibility is it of yours as a player of this game to see to it that your opponent has an enjoyable game? Because as the old phrase goes in this game, and if it applies to any game, the objective of the game is to win, but the purpose is to have fun. So, you know, how much of it falls on you to make the game fun?
So I will say that this is, I'm going to knock this out with like three sentences. So it's my job to not be a dick to the person I'm playing. I need to be clear about what I'm doing. You know, I can joke and have fun with the person, but it's also their responsibility to know that this is a game where you can come and just get tabled. Sometimes that happens. You have to understand that.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going to not attack you with everything in a tournament. It's not my responsibility to keep you in check. And I understand people go on tilt. I go on tilt. I've seen Nate on tilt. I've never seen Dennis on tilt, but I'm pretty sure it's because he's Asian.
I don't wear a fedora anymore.
Like, I mean, so we can't tell when Chris goes on tilt.
Right. What I'm saying is that as long as you have to come to a tournament in the right mentality to start with to have a good time. Like, you have to be able to, you know, it's okay to go on tilt, but then after the game's over, it's over. Let it go.
So let's start with not in a tournament, just a game in general.
So, I mean, like, part of it's, like, knowing what your opponent is going to play, because lists in this game can be very much designed to completely counteract other lists.
Right.
So, like, if I'm playtesting against, like, a Menoff player and they want to play, like, P-Sevi, I'm not going to play Raven, because I can just shoot him off the board on turn two. There's very little you can do about it, except play, like, double adjudicator.
Or a different caster.
Yeah, or a different caster. So, I mean, like, part, like, having fun is making sure that, like, the casters interact in a positive way. You know, you don't want somebody like Gorshe 2 versus like an infantry spam list, because the Gorshe 2 caster is just going to win that game because they can't possibly kill all the Bane Thralls that are going to be generated throughout the game. So, I mean, like, now if you're playtesting and your opponent says, hey, I want to play against this kind of list, and they want to see if a list can work out against it, you know, like, That's different than playing like a fun game. If you want to play like a fun game, playing a caster that's used less often is definitely on the table, you know, because it's just like somebody like P Virus. Like, I don't think I would ever bring P Virus in a tournament, but like when I try to have fun, if I'm just dorking around, I want to play more Jax or whatever, I'll play P Virus just because he's interesting. He does cool things.
Well, I think it's a complicated question because it's a two-way street, right?
Sure.
I mean, you can try and do all your best to, you know, have fun with the guy, but the guy, if he loses and he pisses and moans about it and runs away, there's really nothing you can do about it, right?
Oh, if you hear snoring at some point during this discussion, we apologize on Richard Morrow's behalf.
Stupid Richard.
I know.
So I think what Richard said is right. I mean, I think 50% of it falls on you. Of you playing cleanly, you being very clear about what you're doing so your opponent knows what you're doing. So you can be as clear as you possibly can. And when they ask you questions, answer them as clearly as possible. But don't be an asshole and, you know, like, there's this new rule that I didn't tell you about, and now your whole unit's going to be dead.
There's a difference between withholding information,
right?
Because in this game, like, what your models can do are public information,
exactly.
Right? You know, like, the abilities on the cards. Now, what they can do in the grand scheme of the game, like, you don't have to tell your opponent
what
that
they can do in your, as a cog in your machine.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not public.
Right, and so, I've said, like, playing against, like, new players or stuff like that, I'm like, do you know how, like, Raven Strike Force feat, do you know how Snipe Feet Go works? If you don't know how that works, let me tell you how it works. because this is how I'm going to win the game if I play Raven against you. But, you know, like I said, if I'm going to play, if I'm playing to try to have fun and I'm trying to, like, make my opponent have fun, I'm not going to play Raven.
Right. And if you do play something like that and you're playing, you know, just for fun, when you see your opponent doing something really stupid,
you can,
you have to say, you know, like, hey, wait a minute.
Yeah, you know. Right. I mean, I think teach, like, when I'm, like, it's War Machine's slightly different, but it's definitely the case in other games. If I'm teaching people other games, I don't, like, pull punches necessarily.
Right.
Like, I'll tell them ahead of time, like, this is what I think, you know, I think if you do this, it's going to work out badly for you. If they go ahead and do it, I'm just going to go ahead and show them why it was a bad idea. You know, I'm not going to mollycoddle somebody, but I'm not going to pull, you know.
I don't think you ever play with an objective other than winning. I've never, even in a fun game, I will still play to win.
Yes.
Yeah.
But there's a difference between doing that in, for instance, playtesting.
Yes.
Exactly. I like that when you said playtest environment.
Because that's Rich, a different environment.
Yeah, because this is a situation where you are deliberately asking the person, bring the hardest you have to play. Because I remember playtesting with Rich when he was banging his head against Haley Stormwall. And it was...
In that kind of situation, the playtesting itself, like, those games might go pretty poorly. But the reason you're playing those games is so that you don't feel that frustration in an actual tournament.
And the enjoyment, I think, in that, because I've playtested, I won't speak for Rich, because I watched him throw dice across a room. the enjoyment to me in that situation is figuring out the puzzle.
Yes, yeah, exactly. It's very much the Rubik's Cube. Like, how do I move this stuff and get the stuff to actually work?
So, I think playtesting is one animal that you almost kind of set to the side. A casual game, I'll bring Darius to casual
shoot,
games.
Casual games. I remember Fiona versus... Fiona versus Constance we did.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
That game was nothing
Constance
but a trick.
Constance isn't casual. Constance is terrible.
Yeah. No, we tried. We tried to make that game work. But it was just...
Richard's over here giving me the death stare. I hate Constance Blade.
Not everybody's perfect.
You're right. Not every caster can be Cara Sloan. Anyway.
Moving on.
he pulled out his vape. I thought he was going for the knife for a second.
Why does everybody immediately assume when I put my hand in my pocket that I'm going to stab them?
Because
that's usually
right
what you do.
Knife.
I mean, you're dressed like a dude from Sons of Anarchy.
Actually, yeah.
It's an honest assumption at that point.
You know, I was dressing like this before that was a show, so maybe Sons of Anarchy is like me. Oh, the Twilight
Yeah, well, whatever ethnicity those people are on Sons of Ernicky.
You're Sons of Ernicky, mate.
I think we're broken Chris. But a fun game, to get back on subject, a fun game is a different animal.
Sorry. Just don't take it so damn seriously in a fun game.
There's
some people in a fun game that are like, oh my god, you moved 5 millimeters too far. You're gonna, you know, it's like that takes all the fun out of it.
I still play clean. I will still play
fine. I'm still cheating.
Yeah, I'm still
not gonna let my opponent cheat in a fun game. That's a fun game. You can beat back 8 inches. Cool. Go for it.
But you got me.
But certain things might be more relaxed in a fun game. The atmosphere is going to be different. I will bring a list that I think is just going to be goofy, have fun, and enjoy. Like the second list I brought today. Because I came here to have fun and goof off. I only wound up playing Haley 2 because Rich rolled 2d6, and that wound up being the caster in that spot, literally. Because, like, what am I going to play as a second caster? I don't give a damn as long as it ain't Constance Blaze. And they had my casters lined up, rolled 2d6, it was Haley 2. I was like, well, shit. And then, because I don't like playing Haley 2 as much. And then the other one I played was Nemo 2. Because I have fun playing Nemo. I have fun playing the Nemos in general.
That fucking list, man.
What, Nemo? Or?
It almost broke my brain. I was like, what is this list doing?
my list was Nemo 2 and Squire, right? 4 Minutemen, Lancer, Centurion, and Sentinel.
Okay, so you're doing the Sons of Liberty kind
or
of
jazz.
Yeah, it's Sons of Liberty plus 3.
Yeah. If I had had 2 more Minutemen, then it would have wound up being Sons of Liberty plus a Stormclad. That is my standard 35-point version of Sons of Liberty. But I don't have 6 Minute Men painted at the moment. So...
And Sentinel's a good, I guess, replacement, right? Because he's got shield guards, you can keep Nemo from getting shot.
Well, it actually turns out that you can make him armor 20. You can make him armor 20 in that list, so it actually works.
I'm
going
to be honest with you. I think the way to beat the Gauntlet Signar is to play a list like that, with a million jacks.
Because they can't kill them fast.
Right. Yeah. I never killed the Lancer with...
No.
Equated out to about 20 obstructures in the course of the game.
But on one turn, the Lancer just went there, literally had 3 focus on him, went smack that dude with a shield, poke, 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 and everything he hit died.
So, medium jacks just kill infantry if they touch them most of the time.
Yeah.
I guess if they're not shield walled or whatever.
However, like, positive charging inverters are a problem because they just kill those jacks.
Yeah.
Yes, they did. But, no, you bring... I think part of it is that if you're going to... I think when you sit down to play someone in a casual environment, whether that's a league, whether that is... Basically anything that's not a tournament, I think you sit down, and I'll ask someone when I'm playing them if I don't know them. You know, do you want to play something serious, or would you like to have... Or you want to have fun? And I'll actually ask them that up front. You know, do you want to have a serious competitive game, or are you practicing for something? Do you want to play test something, or do you just want to goof off? Because that will affect what I bring as a list.
Yeah,
and my mentality.
You might bring a list that can't actually crack armor quite as well. Because I remember back when I like first started playing Circle or whatever, I would build lists that just couldn't crack armor at all. And if I didn't play against anything that had heavy armor, it was fine. But because I was doing goofy stuff with like Mozart and like
Mozart, man.
But you might not bring a list that's like necessarily skewed. I think the way the tournament structure works now, you end up with lists that are like horribly skewed one way or another. And then like that just doesn't make for fun playtesting.
I'm pretty
for
sure
fun casual games.
I'm pretty sure Moser is the name of one of those little bitty green dudes on Fraggle Rock.
Actually, I think you're right.
Moser.
Now that you say, yeah, I think Moser was one of them.
Down Fraggle Rock.
That's my old favorite, the Mosers.
I mean, it gets different too because like I don't have a let's just play for fun setting with one.
No, you really don't. But now that comes to, I think, part two of the equation. And this one, to me, comes more into play in tournaments. One of the people that I have watched, and he was actually one of the people that was key in the discussion when I was reading it on Facebook, but one of the guys that is will stomp you in the face, but be one of the most entertaining games you'll play is James Lamson.
Yes.
But it's not because he holds back. It's his demeanor. It's what he does at the table. Because you can, you know, without... There are those people who are going to trash talk and that type of thing and be, you know... I don't want to use the word jerks, but...
Assholes.
Sure. But not to the great extent. Because I have seen very few legitimate assholes in tournaments I've run for War Machine. But you'll have people who are going to be the super serious... You know, eyes focused. I don't want to hear nothing. And to a point, that's Richard. But I've also seen you cut
not really
and have
like
fun
that, no.
at a table too in a tournament setting.
It depends on who I'm playing.
That's part of it.
What round it is.
Yeah.
Let's see.
And it depends on what they're playing. Like if it's, I can look at a lot of lists to go. I'm just going to win.
No,
I can't beat.
But no, simple. Me and you. That gnome con that you showed up, that 5-hour drive, I punched you in the face and we went at round 2. So
I had a blast that game.
Yeah. But
it was fun though.
You have, you know, I think it's the demeanor, it's what type of person is playing. Like, I've never had anyone come to me and say they didn't have a fun time playing Dennis, no matter what the setting is.
Wait, have you had people come to you and say they didn't have a fun time playing me?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. But it's...
Evan's raising his hand. I didn't have a fun time playing Dennis.
Was it Evan?
No. No, but I mean, but this is where it comes. It's not... I also think there's a distinction between not having fun and a negative play experience. Negative play experience is where when you walk away from the table, you question why the hell you showed up to play that day.
Yeah.
Not
yeah,
having,
that's entirely true.
Yeah, that's a negative play experience. I've had people after a game with you, you know, sit there and go, man, that wasn't fun. But it's because they got raffle stomped, and you're, you know, the very serious player. But that's a tournament, and a tournament environment, I don't think it is your responsibility to make sure the other guy has as much fun. And that's something that I honestly do believe. The a tournament, it's for money, marbles, or chalk.
Okay, so it wasn't like a...
Oh, no, it wasn't. Yeah, okay, it wasn't okay. Richard's a dick. I mean, I've heard that, but that's not that was not what was said. So,
where's, yeah, I don't
where's
know
Pete
was,
Mace? Anyway, yeah. Pete's way down there. He's too far away to chime in. Okay, good. But no, I mean, I've heard before, but now for the record, I've heard the same thing said about Nate, where someone kind of was like, that wasn't a fun game.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, yeah. That, but like I said, that's like, that was probably like Raven's Snipeco.
Yeah.
And I'm there
yeah.
to, like, win. I'm
I would be, I, and I hate to say it, I would be willing to say, I doubt Andrew had a lot of fun playing the game that I played with him today.
Yeah. Well, but, and there was a, I mean, like, there was a, the tournament, I think towards the end of last year, I played one of the North Carolina guys, and he, like, popped feet. With zealots, popping mini feet with the zealots. Okay. He was playing Harbinger. He ran the zealots up, and I used Hyperion's gun. I crit with it, and I removed most of the zealots from the game.
Yeah,
because it's not damaging. It's just they got hit by the attack, and I can't. Yeah. I can still target them with the attack, and I was like, so I removed like a bunch of the zealots from the game, and the strike force just walk up and enter a series of feet and mow down Harbinger. And he was like, well, huh? And I know that game couldn't be fun.
Yeah,
you know, and. If you're listening to this, I apologize, but it was just.
Well,
I
mean, no,
but I mean, you, know, yeah, you need to apologize.
Well, I'm not gonna. Like I said, I'm not gonna pull a punch in a tournament setting.
Sure.
Exactly. But, and I think it would be disrespectful for you to pull a punch in a
right,
tournament.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, you gotta play your hardest, and if you raffle stomp them, you raffle stomp them.
Yeah.
If you get raffle stomp.
I mean, it happens.
Yeah. Exactly.
Particularly
exactly.
Like round ones. Round
yeah.
ones, a lot of that happens in tournaments.
Yeah. Now, I think there is an opposite side. I think there's an opposite side to that equation, which is it's one thing if you're the one doing the raffle stomping, it's another thing if you're the one getting stomped. And I have watched a lot of guys who they stomp their opponent like either melts down or walks away mad or gets pissy or whatever, which, you know, my advice, if you are one of those people, my advice would be suck it up, sunshine, because it happens. But that aside, I've watched a lot of players who won that game are like, man, I feel bad about that. And so I think a lot of that falls on if you're the guy on the receiving end to take it gracefully. You know, regardless of the environment, take it gracefully. Because that's...
I mean, because I've seen a lot of games where, like... It'll come down to, like, one die roll that goes, like, really, really poorly for the opponent. Mm-hmm. And they're like, man, I lost the game because of that die roll. But if you go back and you take a look at the game, they probably lost the game before that. There's probably
sure.
some decision that was made. And, like, sure, that die roll is the last die roll made in the game
mm-hmm.
to decide. But there were decisions made or there were things that happened in that game that contributed to that loss. And
yeah.
I think a lot of people don't realize that. Like the game that I think about when I think about games where after it was over, I was like, man, I really wish I could have like taken back my behavior. Was the game I played against Coop, where I missed like all of my attacks I made in one turn,
mm-hmm.
And like that game was going poorly before that, and then that certainly exacerbated it, and like I lost the game, but. If that game had continued on, and even if I maybe hit one attack and on that turn, you know, I don't think I win that game.
Yeah.
So, like, looking at the game from that perspective makes it a little bit easier to swallow. Like, sure, I missed every single attack, but I don't think I was going to win that game.
Right.
Anyway.
Well, I think the best way to take a loss like that gracefully is to keep trying.
Right,
like,
right.
Don't,
exactly.
Don't give up because that makes the game stupid for the other guy.
Right, exactly.
So I mean,
I have seen people who do that, who
yeah.
just throw in the towel because something went wrong.
You could just keep doing everything you can to either stall them or slow down the game, or not like slow down the game, but like keep them from winning.
Right,
like don't leave
don't, like,
everything open.
Don't just yeah. concede.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know it can happen where you're getting raffle stomped and then you pull out a miracle win from an assassination.
Well, and it's like the game I played with Richard today. Looking at it from that standpoint, I you know probably bad grace for me because at the very end, I screwed up, made a mental error because I was on the clock, and I was like, okay, when I realized that the model I thought I had killed, I didn't do enough damage to kill. I was like, well, shit, that's game. And Rich sits there and goes, dude, I can still screw this up. And I'm like, okay, fair. Yeah. So, you know, it's one of those things, you know, in the old phrase, it's not over till it's over.
Yeah. And back to the dice thing Nathan was talking about. Like, I do not condone blaming dice for loss. But, I mean, I will say that on occasion, the dice, you can have games where the dice are the factor in losing.
Yeah.
You know, I've lost to players that are, you know, new players that are nowhere near any of our leagues, right? Like, play-wise yet. Sure. And, like, it's my dice rolls are terrible, you know? Like,
Well, I remember the first year I went to GnomeCon where most of them were all really pretty much just barely getting into the game.
Right.
And, I mean, I didn't know what to think after going through most of those games, except for, you know, obviously going against people I've played forever. It's like, you know, they're confident, they're going in, like, hey, I got this really cool model, and you go in and that, just trash that model like it was nothing, and you're like, ugh.
So if you're not the outgoing personality or the outgoing fun-loving personality when it comes to being, you know, that level of easygoing, I would put Chris in that category. I would put Dennis in that category. I think, you know, some folks that our listeners know from our area, I think a lot of times Lampson's in that category. I think Liam Piver's in that category.
I usually have a pretty fun game against Liam.
Yeah,
almost always.
The very fun, laid-back players. Once you get to know Keith Creasa, he's in that category. Until that point, you're kind of like, what do I make of this guy? But you know, once you get to know some guys, but you're in an environment for those people. Then you have the guys that are the very focused, very competitive players, which is where I would put the two of you guys at. That's where I would put Rich and Nate at. And
I try to crack jokes,
but it doesn't make it not fun though. Yeah.
But I mean, when you go in the tank, you go in the tank. I've seen you during a serious game.
I'm not looking like I shut out my opponent. Like I'll ask him. My opponent is only there to answer the questions I need asked if I'm. Like looking at the board.
Particularly like at the top table of a tournament is where you're going to see that kind of stuff.
But if you are that hyper competitive player and you're wanting to put forth the most enjoyable game possible, not saying you're not trying to win, not saying, what do you do? You're that hyper competitive player. Basically, not necessarily make it. I hesitate to say to make it fun for your opponent because it may not be. If you're competitive, he's competitive, it's not going to be fun for one of you, but necessarily. But at least to make sure that it's not a negative experience.
I don't know what you can do, honestly. Like,
I
think it's mostly behavioral. I don't think it's the actual game type play.
Right, exactly. I'll crack jokes about something. Like I'll make... Yeah, a lot of it's just kind of situational jokes. Like, you know, I'll say I'm gonna like I'll joke about doing like a really terrible move, and you know, and then stuff like that. Just kind of
like,
small things.
I think Ayana is gonna.
Yeah, I'm like, I think Ayana's just gonna run into melee with Croak, you know, the Croak Hunter, or something like that. You know, jokes like that,
right.
and you know, or it's just kind of sliding in little stuff. It's trying to prove throughout the game that I'm not there. I'm not here just for winning. I'm here to have fun.
You're not a robot.
Exactly. Right. I'm not an emotionless.
Does not compute.
I'm not an emotionless murder machine.
What I will give Richard on that is one thing I think is you've said you know, earlier that you can walk into a game a lot of times, see the list, and go, well, I know I'm going to win. What I will give you credit for is I think a lot of hyper-competitive players would, at that point, begin the bad mouth and the trash talk and that kind of, because I've seen it happen.
Exactly.
I've never seen you treat the game as if you winning is a foregone conclusion. So that's what
makes you good. I mean, there are people out there that look at the list and they know they're going to win, and then they tell their opponent, I'm going to win and this is exactly how I'm going to win. And then I'm on the other side of the table going, okay, you just told me your game plan and now I'm just going to counter it and I'm going to win.
But it's also a thing, it's a play experience. If I sat down here playing Rich and he sat there and he looked at my list, looked at his list, he's like, dude, your list is garbage. There's no way you can beat that. There's no way you can beat me because you didn't bring anything for this. You didn't bring anything to do that. This is terrible. Why are you? Because I've seen people with that kind of behavior in other games.
Yeah.
That's something I give you a lot of credit for because you don't do that.
I don't. If I'm trash talking, typically it's as a joke. I don't trash talk people I don't know.
Right.
There's only one individual that I will trash talk, and I'll trash talk him to his face. But long story there. But I mean, as far as like, I'm not gonna trash talk people I don't know.
Where's Pete?
No.
No.
But if I'm trash talking you, like, it's in a joking way, and it means I like you. That's just how I show affection. It's me and Nate could be hanging out, and you would hear some of those horrible things people have said about each other, and it just means we like each other.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and
I mean, not like we're boyfriend and boyfriend, but
I mean, listen,
for the life of me, I will never understand why Richard likes Slipknot music.
Right. So he makes fun of that.
Yes.
So I guess what it is what you don't do. Like, yes. You don't like.
Right.
Be
that's
an
definitely
asshole.
Part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean. And another thing, not in the category of take backs, but in the category of your opponent makes a decision based on information that they didn't have, letting them know, like telling them stuff ahead of time,
right.
Like, hey, if you're trying to take that shot, if you're thinking about taking the shot, these guys have stealth, stuff like that. It's not. It's totally different at like a top table, but like in the first couple of rounds,
or like playing rich, just because my tokens that I use have symbols on them, there's not really space to write things on them. I looked at one point because I thought at one point there were three jacks lined up and he was considering charges, and I was like, just remember this guy has clarity shield up, you can't charge him. Mm-hmm. And he knew that, but you know, I saw him eyeball and was like, okay, I don't want him to say to me as a player, but like, I would hate for to sit there and go, well, I'm going to charge the target. You can't. Sorry. And his opponent, no, that's, you know, or the dude has stealth and you shoot. Well, you miss.
But you know, one thing I do too, like playing, I've been playing Convergence for a while now.
Right.
Like one thing I'll do is it's still new to a lot of people. So
yep.
I'll be like, so these are the things you need to know about how induction works. This is how the corollary works.
Mm-hmm.
My entire battle group, I make sure, even if they don't want to see my cards, that I tell them the basics of Convergence so they know kind of what to expect. Because I don't want to on turn one, like, move a corollary up, get a focus from a caster, and then spin one, induct one, and they'll be like, how did you just make focus out of thin air? I like to explain it beforehand.
Sure.
Right. And the things, I mean, you don't want to do things like, you know, you're playing a game, you know you're going to win, and just be like, you know, oh, well, all I really have to do now is decide which beast to kill of yours. And it's just kind of like,
like
an
I'm not
so
going.
It's kind of like, there are people who think that like their lives are a movie being recorded, and like they're giving like the
they're doing the monologue.
They're doing the monologue. They're doing like the villain monologue.
There's
the villain.
You've foolishly fallen into my trap. Now once I finish off your. Warp Wolf Stalker.
I've actually seen Lampson do that, but it was in that voice with
right.
So
I won't name names. There's an individual that I know personally, and he's not from our area. He plays War Machine 40K other stuff, and I've seen him at a high end 40K tournament. It was at Adepticon the one year I went, and he would just do ridiculously embarrassing things. And it's got to make opponents filter. So, like, for example, he's playing this army. It's Space Marines. He's got six Dreadnoughts in his army. So he's got, like, three Elite, three Heavy. Okay?
Yeah.
One, like, the gun is going terrible. He has lost a Dreadnought. He has killed a lot of stuff. So the opponent makes, like, a tactical withdrawal. Okay? Because I'm watching this. He proceeds to, on his next turn, have a barrier ritual for his one Dreadnought that's dead, just taunting the other person. And I think that's incredibly rude. Incredibly rude. So, you know, I think you definitely...
Yeah, it's like, oh, I'm going to walk my caster up backwards, you can't kill
him. And if somebody... I think another thing you can do is if somebody's... If the game does go to a point where you can tell your opponent's not having fun, they want to be done, there's a way for you to end the game. I'm not saying to put yourself at risk at losing, but if you can be like, I can just run my caster, dominate, and win by scenario this turn, you do it. You try to end the game as soon as you can for them, because sometimes you get stuck in that game where you're just not going to have fun. I've been in that game. I've had those games.
Some games get down to just a simple arithmetic, and you just say, "All right, yeah, I think this at this point it's just kind of academic. I can do this, and you can win, you buy on scenario, or whatever." And your opponent would be like, "Fine, you know." Yeah, I think offering a graceful way out or like bowing out, not like I know it kind of runs opposite of a concession kind of thing, but like at some point,
essentially,
like the game that Richard and I played, where he killed where I had three models left on the field and none of them had weapons. The game's just over. It was like a series of two banner dudes, and I'm just like, the game's over. I can't throw an attack. I have no offensive moves left. So.
Yeah, I mean,
you could run away forever. Velocity, velocity, velocity.
But then I lose some scenarios. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, I think if you can look at your opponent and you can tell this person is not having fun, let's look at the board, see if there's, you know, if there's a 95 to 100% assassination, or if I can win on scenario. Let's just get the game over with so they can get
something else. I think, like, just ending the game on scenario as opposed to dragging the game out forever and murdering the pieces one by one is definitely more.
Right,
of
yeah,
a,
like, I think.
Definitely more of like a. I mean, one, you get more, like, as strategically, you get more tiebreaker points because control points are.
Well,
better,
now,
but,
as a for instance, I will throw this out there. I watched this happen to Scarab, and I'm going to.
Did somebody run up the score, basically?
I'm going to give credit around the table on this one.
Okay.
I watched James, and James Lamson is a wonderful tournament player. And he will do this, but it's because, frankly, in a tournament situation, he's there to win. He's there to ensure that he's as far up the ranking as he can. So if he can tell he has the game in hand, he will never sit there and gloat or anything like that. I think unless he knows, because I've watched the jabs between friends, that's one thing. But someone he never knows or doesn't know, it's a different story. But he will sit there. I watched him basically stall out winning the scenario until he had tabled everything.
To get the
maximum tiebreaker points, and then won on scenario after he basically set it up so that when I assassinate your caster and complete tabling you, at the end of the turn I will score my fifth control point.
Yeah.
And
I won't do things like that. Like, I understand, you know.
But now the thing, to finish the point, because I wouldn't either. But he did it, and he was joking, I mean, things like that. He kept the mood light as he could, even though he's tabling
the
guy.
Right, you're killing every single model they have.
And the other guy, to his credit, the other dude just was sitting there with a smile on his face, just looking like, shit. And but he stayed relaxed. And the guy himself, even afterwards, said, no, I mean, I know what he's doing. It's not, yeah. You know, he's like, you know, so, you know, and he's like, it still gives me opportunity to play and to try to do something and things like that. But, you know, it's, I'm with you, I wouldn't do that.
Usually I'll look at the table and I'm like, all right, I'm going to win on scenario this turn. I will activate my entire army still, and I will kill as much as I can on that turn, but then I'll let it be over.
Yeah.
Because kill points is like,
kill points,
it's on that.
Yeah, it's way low.
Control points is the most important thing. So yeah. I just, you know.
The last several tournaments that I've played in, like, kill points have not been, like, an issue for my army. Like, the
stuff dies.
Yeah, stuff is going to get killed. I mean, the stuff that's hurt me on tiebreakers or whatever has always been control points.
Right.
So,
kind of closing thoughts on this subject. If you could give anybody, whether it's in a tournament situation, a fun situation, preface, let us know. But one tip to make sure that you and your opponent both have a fun time, what would it be? Chris. Nate.
Thank you.
He's going to take all the good ones.
It's a game. And any game, especially a game that has dice, literally has millions of possible outcomes. And when the game is finished, you've gotten only just one of those outcomes. And if you just keep that in mind, you know, and just let that influence, like, your kind of decisions. Like, any game can end, you know, 100 different possible ways. And, like, trying to, and, like, so focusing on, like, a single die roll or anything like that will just, it leads to the path of madness.
In Nathan's footsteps, remember, it's a game. You were playing with tiny painted people, with other grown people that are using tiny painted people.
It helps if you make gun noises when you shoot.
Yeah, right.
Pew pew.
But yeah, like, at the end of the day,
things the dildos.
Dildos. Seriously, at the end of the day, you were playing a game. What is the word "game" mean in the definition? Dictionary. Definitionary.
Definitionary.
I got brain acne.
You fail at language.
Yeah. Definitionary.
The other, so fun story, me and Nathan rode to Atlanta when we had our ice apocalypse, and on the way back there was this long road, and it was like something drive. I was like, dude, look, it's blah 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 doctor, blah 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 doctor. And he was like, it's drive, Richard. It's drive. But no, I mean, seriously, it's a game, you know, and in the dictionary, a game is a event to be enjoyed by two or more people in order to have fun. So, you know, remember that you're not going to get, you know, thrown in a pit of alligators if you lose this game. You're going to go home, you're going to eat dinner, you're going to go to bed. And if you win, guess what? You're going to go home, you're going to eat dinner, you're going to go to bed.
Yeah, I'm the same way. It's a game. If you go in there, it's all about perspective. You go in there and you feel like it's your life's work that you're going to win this game, then you're going to be disappointed.
As a person that went through that for about 4 years, I'm telling you, it's not worth it. It stresses you out. I have a gray beard, and I'm 31.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of the best players that I've played in all of the conventions that I've been to, some of the best players that I've played, one thing I notice about them is that they love playing the game. And you can see that. You can see that they love playing it. And if they didn't love playing the game, then they wouldn't be here. So
where's the coin slot? I want to allocate you a focus.
So if you enjoy playing the game and you go in thinking that you're going to enjoy playing the game, then your opponent's automatically going to.
I'm sorry. I just thought about how that sounds if you couldn't see the image of what Whitebridge was trying to do. So if you just had your eyes closed and tried to imagine, well, no. Anyway.
Yeah. Racist bastard.
I'm not racist. But I'm not racist. Okay? Racism is a crime. And crime is for black people.
I've been arrested multiple times, just to let you know.
For that exact reason.
It helps when you have a black friend that just lets you be this way.
And Chris.
You know, to be honest, you just have to relax. You know, take the game bit by bit. I mean,
I'm glad you said game, because I thought this was going somewhere else for a minute. Relax, loosey goosey, let it all, just take it all in.
Move to Colorado, baby. Just relax,
man. I mean, just like Richard said, I mean, for crying out loud, we're playing with toy soldiers, Brad. I mean,
they're not toys, that's on the box. Reward
they're
it.
Miniatures.
I don't care.
And not figurines, like some of my friends like to call them.
If you want
to
get past airport security, they're toys.
Toys, thank you.
Just
I can't imagine ever putting models on a flight, so.
I've done
the
it.
The things that I'll have in my suitcase that they'll be asking me about
it
are
is
toys.
Fun.
But no, like I said, we're pushing little toy men across the board to try and do whatever, and you're gonna be that guy that's really hardcore. Truly hardcore.
If you're getting mad about pushing toy soldiers around, you probably got some problems somewhere.
Yeah, thank you.
I know I did.
That's about it. I mean,
for myself, I can sum it up in basically three or four words, which I'm going to amend because I just saw an adolescent walk past. Don't be a jerk. It's that simple. You can stop counting now. Don't be a jerk. Four words.
It's that simple. That's
seven.
That's
he's explaining it. That sentence is the one explaining it.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Words. You guys are a little bit
right. it is very simple. Don't be a jerk. Don't, you know, you are throwing around little plastic boxes that have numbers on them. Pushing little toy soldiers around a table, and whether you win or lose does not make you any better or worse a person than the person you are standing across the table from.
That just gave me an idea. Little boxes. I'm going to grab a cube box that's like 12 inches by 12 inches and draw pips on them. And roll that.
And you're going to throw it at your opponent's arm.
That's going to be my tough die.
You can say, you can roll it and say one dot, one roll to roll them off.
Yes.
Oh, man. But yeah, I think it's been a good discussion. We are about at our hour, I'm sure, after Crispy edits out all the bullshit.
So I do want to point something out real quick. I received more phone calls and text messages about the Shifting Stones nerf than I did about Leonard Nimoy dying.
Yeah, that's kind of sad. By the way, for those out there who live under a rock, Leonard Nimoy, the actor who played Mr. Spock on Star Trek, the voice of In Search of, one of the agents on Mission Impossible, simply put, one of the finest actors of in American television and movie history, passed away this past week, and as a Star Trek fan, I know that left me kind of brokenhearted for a little bit, because Spock is awesome, Right. And somewhere up there, I hope Mr. Nimoy is with DeForest Kelly and James Doohan. And please, up there, wherever you are, when DeForest Kelly calls him a green-blooded inhuman bastard, give him a pass. It's okay. They're rehearsing lines.
I was listening to the radio right when they found out. You know, like it was a big thing immediately.
Yeah.
They actually called George Takei, who was Sulu. Right. And like I thought what he had to say was really great. And he said, I would never use the words extraordinary to describe a man, but in this case, I think it's the perfect word. God, that was the feels.
Yeah.
but to my point was, yeah. I received it. The news of Leonard Nimoy dying was about the gravity that people treated the Shifting Stones nerf with me. Like, yeah. people were like, did you hear the news? I'm sorry, Nathan. Shifting Stones have been nerfed.
As if the entire army, like your entire army of models, just collapsed, melted in on themselves in that moment.
Wait, I don't know. What is the nerf for the Shifting
Stones? You can't
double teleport anymore.
You can only teleport.
Or in the case of Radicus Chalice, triple teleport.
Oh.
But yeah,
which I look at and go.
I told you, I definitely didn't tell you.
Which I still think Circle is completely still playing.
But like
nothing wrong.
It was seriously over that span of like that first 24 hours. It was like phone calls, text messages. Like if I had a Facebook, I can only imagine what it would have actually been.
Yeah. Poor Nathan. Poor Nathan and his Shifting Stones.
Dude, you don't even
worry.
play Circle anymore.
He plays Rhett. All right, folks. Well, until next time, which will be sooner rather than later, we hope, we'll be at GnomeCon 3. Chris will be holding the mic down for Almost Live. Until then, I'm Mike.
Rich.
Dennis.
Nathan.
And Chris.
And we will see you next time on Rage Quit Radio. Pretty sure none of those are the closing theme songs.
You've been listening to Rage Quit Radio. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/RQRpodcast. You can visit us online at ragequitradio.blogspot.com. Listen to us on Podomatic, ragequitradio.podomatic.com, or find us on Stitcher Smart Radio. You can email us at ragequitradiopodcast@gmail.com.